All right, welcome back here on a Friday. Miami Dolphins getting set this afternoon to head out to Seattle. And that means it's time for a little Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Mike, good morning. How you doing?
Joe, I'm doing great, buddy. How are you?
We're doing great. We're trying to give you as much information. We're trying to give you as much substance as we possibly can for Pro Football Talk. I want to ask you about this Tua thing. So he's going to be out 5 weeks at least on IR minimum with the off week, bye week as well. And then what? And then what happens after the 5-step protocol, which I'm guessing he will pass by then? What happens then, Mike?
Well, Joe, let's take a step back and let's consider the broader culture in the NFL as it relates to concussions. It was October of 2009 that the NFL was forced to take head injuries seriously when Congress brought Commissioner Roger Goodell and then Executive Director of the NFLPA, Demore Smith, to Capitol Hill for a hearing. In the aftermath of that, the message was simple, and this is where Congress involvement can be beneficial. Basically, you have a mess, and if you don't clean it up yourself, we'll clean it up for you, and you might not like how we do it. So the NFL beefed up the return to play protocol, and since then, now at first, guy'd have a concussion. Typically, he'd miss a game,
right,
and then come back. At some point in the past several years, the presumption flipped, and we saw a lot of guys who come back right away, including last year. Brock Purdy had a concussion Monday night against Minnesota, was cleared to play the following Sunday, 6 days later. So this has been, and it has become, just kind of a box-checking exercise. And the NFL is sensitive to that, but that really is what it is. The guy wants to play. The team wants him to play. He has the concussion. He has to progress through this step, boom, and can play. Rarely do you see a guy put on injured reserve for concussions, and it's happened to Tua twice. And I say all that because I don't know that 4 weeks is enough to allow anyone to make responsible, big-picture, short-term and long-term decisions. Because when he comes back, he's one play away from another concussion. That's the problem. This wasn't some fluke injury. This wasn't like the Damar Hamlin situation, the extremely rare commotio cordis, which prompts cardiac arrest from a blow to the chest. It's just kind of a fluke weird thing. We know guys get concussions. Guys get hit in the head. And for Tua, they seem to be happening more easily, or they seem to be more severe than they should be, given the quality of the hit. So I just think that the only way to truly make a good long-term decision and get the air out of the balloon before you make that strategic call about what you're going to do with your career, I feel like that's something that needs to happen after the season. I just don't know how the issues that are prompting the Dolphins to put him on IR so they can buy some time and make some good decisions, I don't know that those go away after 4 weeks, given the history, given the severity, and given the reality that he could get another concussion in his next game back.
So the follow-up to that is, so some independent neurologist, because he does want to come back and play, and obviously the team would like to have him when he's ready, and they're listening to all these professionals. So what independent neurologist is going to put his name on and tell the league, I think it's okay for him to come back?
Well, that's the problem, Joe. At some point, there will be a player, and it probably happened to Job at best 13 years ago. You just get to a point where no one will say you can play. And one of the things that we have to be realistic about, and I tried to write something about this yesterday. Michael Hawley and I discussed it on PFT Live on Wednesday. Even though everyone is saying and doing all the right things, and appropriately so publicly, privately, these are businesses that strategize. What's in our best interest? What do we want? And you've got the player, you've got the team, and you've got the league. The team may want him back. The player may want to come back. The league may not want this.
That's right.
Does the league really want guy who is one snap away from another concussion, which becomes NBC Nightly News, ABC Nightly News, CBS Evening News, morning shows, and gets parents to start saying, maybe we shouldn't let these kids play tackle football? And see, you say independent neurologist, and you're right, partially. Independent of the team, not independent of the league, independent of the team. Still beholden to the league. If the league doesn't want him to play anymore, And I don't want to be overly cynical, but then again, I've been covering this league for 25 years. If the league doesn't want him to play anymore, knowing glances, winks and nods, conversations off the record, and maybe he can't get cleared. And the weirdest outcome here, Joe, would be the Dolphins doctors, independent doctors, NFL doctors don't clear him, and he exercises his prerogative under the CBA to get a second opinion, and there's a doctor he finds that does clear him. Then what happens?
Yeah. No, boy. Yeah. Wow. Well, we've got some time now. We got some Skylar Thompson time now starting this Sunday here, and everybody's saying all the right things. What do you expect? He played a lot his rookie year, got some starts. Now he gets his fourth start, did not play at all last year, to go to Seattle in that loud building and play, coming off an offense that hasn't been very good the first 2 weeks.
Well, he got thrown into a tough spot last Thursday night. The offense looked obviously and clearly different with him out there. I didn't see any of that, and I call it shell game stuff underneath, which is very effective. I don't mean it in a pejorative way. Like, where's the ball? Hey, the quarterback's got it. He goes this way. This guy's this way. This guy's – who's got the freaking football? And I didn't see that from Skylar Thompson. I think that's a key component of the offense that requires reps and timing and practice and over and over. And I assume they've spent a lot of time this week getting Skylar Thompson to the point where he can still do those things that Tua was doing so well. That was Tua's, and it is his superpower, working that underneath stuff that keeps defenses on their toes about where the football is. So that's what I'm going to be looking for on Sunday. But this is just a tough, tough thing. Think about what this team has been through in the first two games of the season. I wrote something about the Tyreek Hill situation, just an update on that earlier. It's like, it's only been 12 days, and it feels like a lifetime ago. Yes. that he had that incident before the week one game against the Jaguars. So this team has been through a lot. One of the reasons that I thought they'd lose last Thursday night, just – it was a lot to go through. The win, the off-field stuff, the scrutiny of it. You know, a little frustration I think may have flashed from Tyreek Hill yesterday. Now, it's one thing to read the words on paper. It's another thing to see the press conference. But, you know, he made a comment. He was asked about Tua, and he's like, well, I'm sure you all have asked everybody in the locker room about this. And that's what happens.
Yeah.
These issues become things that take over the team. And, you know, are they distractions? I don't know. But when you have every player who's asked about how's Tua doing a week after every player was asked about the Tyreek Hill situation, it wears on a team mentally when the team they're getting ready to play isn't dealing with any of that stuff.
You know, it's funny you said that, because the day before the game, this Thursday night game on Wednesday, Tyreek is answering questions about what he thinks about what he just went through with the police. So yeah, and I was thinking, wow, this he was being asked questions about it. It wasn't like he goes, hey, I want to start with this, but he had to answer that stuff, and that was the big, big question. So we got a lot of other stuff. I saw a weird one. I'm not asking you to take shots at anybody, or you may agree. Mel Kiper Jr. came out with this Outlaw the Two Deep, which I thought was one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, but I don't know how you feel about it. I understand the scoring is way down. I guess it's at about 21.5 points per game right now is the league average. And by the way, we're one of them. We averaged 29 a game last year. We're down half that at 15 right now. I don't know if you can do anything else to try to cut the legs off of this of the NFL defenses, and they've already done. My God, I just think some teams going to have to make some adjustments. I think some of it's quarterback play. I think some of it's coaching and the offensive line. What's been your take on a slow start from a lot of these offenses?
Well, first of all, and I say this with all due respect and deference to the career that Mel Kiper basically made for himself out of thin air, but why the hell are we hearing anything from Mel Kiper in September? Isn't he supposed to be rabbit hole studying film and grinding tape and getting ready to entertain us in March and April?
Correct.
I just thought it was weird that Mel Kiper has any take, and that's always been the disconnect. He's college football film studier, period. And now he's got this weird take, and this does not help him to the extent he's trying to gain legitimacy beyond.
Yeah, that was stupid. That was really dumb. I was wondering what those former guys were going to say. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, look, it's, I understand the frustration, and I wonder how much of it is driven by, hey, I said these young quarterbacks are going to be good and they're not very good. Well, there's got to be a reason for it other than the fact that they're not doing very well. Let's get rid of the too high safety. You know, you got 11 guys on the field on defense. you deploy them however you want. You know, this isn't Pro Bowl rules where you can't blitz. And the NFL has done many things over the last 50 years to pump up offenses. I guess it would have been easy in the 70s to dictate which defenses are permitted and which aren't, like basketball does with no zone defense at the NBA level. It's just a weird, kooky take. And if they are interested in goosing offense, and the NFL is, because the years where scoring is high, Joe, I get all the press releases from the league saying, oh, the most scoring.
Right.
You know, they bathe in that stuff when it's happening, and they ignore it when it's not. But if they're going to change rules, the last thing they're going to do is tell how do you even enforce that? What do? You throw a flag because the safety was up in the box and he ran back to help cover the receiver? I mean, it's asinine when you think about it.
Yeah.
All due respect to Mel Kiper, it's asinine.
Yeah. So last night, I don't know, I'm not a huge Aaron Rodgers fan, but I thought he looked pretty good last night in the game. So he comes off, they get a win. He has a good win. They're 2-1. That thing with Robert Saleh was really weird towards the end of the game when he came off the field. And it just, Mike, maybe it's just me, but what Robert Saleh and Aaron Rodgers said after the game about it just didn't really match up with those two kind of, I couldn't see, obviously hear what they were saying, but what I thought they were saying, it just didn't match up. It felt to me a little bit like Aaron Rodgers still pissed about he threw him under the bus during minicamp and said, oh, what'd you think of that, and had to fine him?
Well, first of all, I think that Aaron Rodgers should have been at the mandatory minicamp, and the excuse and the explanation that he eventually gave doesn't hold water because he talked about what the timeline is for the offseason program. He's been in this for 15 years. He knows when the mandatory minicamp happens or when it could happen. That was all just baloney, and he deliberately and intentionally ditched the mandatory minicamp, and he got what he should have gotten for it, and he should have been there with his team. The thing last night, now, it was a far cry from the time that Mike Zimmer and Kirk Cousins did the push and shove and hold me back and get out of my face thing after the Vikings came from behind to beat the Lions on a walk-off field goal. The thing that I thought was the most significant, when Rodgers walks away, he gives a look back to Saleh, which is kind of side-eye, stink-eye combined. And, you know, Rodgers doesn't do anything accidentally. But there was that look. I don't know what it was. Sometimes our true feelings pop through our facial expressions, things we aren't really consciously trying to control. And there was just something about that look that made me think, is everything okay with these two?
Especially
when you're dealing with a guy who's got a history of interpersonal conflict, who if you cross him, I'm still working on the Ian O'Connor book about Rodgers. I mean, it really is weird. If you cross him, he cuts you off. He completely and totally cuts you off. There's no reconciliation, even with family. I mean, something happened in his immediate family that caused him to shut down all of his family.
Everybody.
Like one uncle, extended family, grandma that he used to call every Sunday morning before the game. She shut out too. And it's sad that that happens. I'm a big believer that, you know, family is all we have, and we have to find a way to work through our differences and mend fences with family. And even if it means one party to a conflict has to just accept that, you know, I don't agree with what they did, but that's what unconditional love is. And so when you're dealing with a guy who has that history and you see that look fired at his coach, yeah, you're going to wonder what the hell's going on here.
Yeah, I feel better because I was thinking the same thing. And, I thought, hey, you got a nice win.
The look, not the shove. The look was the thing that got my attention.
Yeah. Hey, finally, Bryce Young gets benched. What was your take on the benching? I know a lot of people going, now he's screwed. Now the confidence is going to be shot putting Andy Dalton in there.
Well, look, I always want to know where decisions like this originate. I think owners meddle a lot more than we know because they don't want us to know that they meddle. The only thing better than being rich and famous is being rich. And if you're making decisions, if you're perceived as making decisions, you become notorious on top of being rich. And I think a lot of owners want to be able to stir the pot without being spotted holding the spoon. And David Tepper, the owner of the Panthers, has shown in his short time, relatively speaking, as owner of the team, that he does imprint his will on the organization, like pushing them toward Bryce Young last year, and now he's fallen out of love with Bryce Young. And I, you know, there's an alternate universe out there where The Panthers took C.J. Stroud, and the Texans took Bryce Young. And a lot of people had Young ahead of Stroud. This wasn't some weird curveball that the Panthers threw on the NFL. And, you know, people weren't saying at the time, how in the world are the Panthers considering Bryce Young? There were people out there who thought he could play. And I just wonder, if the Panthers had taken Stroud and the Texans had taken Young, would Young have panned out and would Stroud have gotten benched this week? The one thing that we overlook in the National Football League, when a quarterback goes somewhere and doesn't perform well, we hang it on him. And I think that in many cases, it's not his fault. It's partially his fault, but it's not all his fault.
Agree.
Look at how the Jets have ruined quarterbacks. And look at what Geno Smith did after 8 years in exile. Look at what Sam Darnold's doing in Minnesota this year. And I think the Panthers possibly fall into that category. And I think they owe it to Bryce Young to let him go somewhere else, let him pick his next destination. I understand they hold his contractual rights and they have no intent to trade him, yada, yada, yada. But if you're not going to play this guy and you've decided he can't play, let him go somewhere else where maybe he can. But see, teams don't like to do that either, Joe, because they don't want to look bad.
Correct.
They don't want to make it look like it was them. They want people to think it was the player, not the organization.
Boy, Mike, I tell you, we've been watching, and you and I have been talking about these first-round quarterbacks that work out and don't work out, and you're right. We don't talk enough about the system. We don't talk enough about the coaching, and we don't talk enough about the talent around them, which is not very good in a lot of cases. Hey, Mike, thank you,
hey, Joe,
man.
Joe, yeah. let me throw this out.
Yeah.
Because I've been talking about this a lot. Now that you have these incoming players who have NIL money in the bank, when will one of them stand up and say to a dysfunctional team with a history of ruining quarterbacks, if you draft me, I'm just going to sit out all year and live off my NIL money, and I'll re-enter the draft next year?
You know, the only thing, by the way, we have talked a lot about that. Mike, the only problem there is that first contract, especially if you're a high pick, 28, 30, 31, 32 million. A lot of that, as you know, is signing bonus up front. They're not making that kind of NIL money. We got a guy down here.
Never get a set, but you have enough to live on.
Yeah, you do.
And you can weather the storm, and you get the first contract, but that's the only contract you ever get. The second contract is going to be far more valuable than the first one.
Yeah, nope. That could happen. No, but then the injury stuff comes up as well, and going back to college, and now maybe my team's not as good.
College. I'm just sitting out.
Oh,
I'm
you're just sitting out.
I'm okay. Not going to play.
Wow.
I'll see you next year.
Yeah.
I'll just stay in shape. And I'll you know, at least the next year, the player's got a better chance of going where he wants to go. This whole draft thing, we've been brainwashed into thinking it's an honor and a privilege. It's not for some of these guys. It's a career death sentence for some of these guys.
Yeah.
Right?
A lot of these quarterbacks.
Their career started.
Oh, man. Hey, Mike, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. See you, buddy.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk.